Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. I'm speaking today with Kalle Lawson. He's the founder of Adbusters Magazine, the Media Foundation, and the PowerShift Ad Agency, and also of TV Turnoff Week and Buy Nothing Day. He's the author of Culture Jam, The Uncooling of America, and you can find his work and Adbusters at adbusters.org. Welcome, Kalle.
Yes, hello.
You have become an icon for anti-commercialism and the kind of the unjamming of the American mind of commercial content.
Somewhat. I mean, the work we do cuts across a lot of areas, but I think that we're probably best known for Buy Nothing Day and for Adbusters magazine and for this this very intense dislike that we have for consumer culture and this belief that we must become culture jammers and somehow veer our culture into a whole new direction.
So this perspective of a critique of commercialization and its impact on American or on Western and global society,
It's
led to a number of different kinds of critiques. One of the critiques that led me to you and that led people to recommend that I interview you, many of my guests have recommended that we talk, is the Cyborg Manifesto Project, which was a critique of biotechnology. Can you tell us a little bit about how that grew out of the Adbusters work?
Yes, well, a few years ago, we noticed that there were some really wild kind of speculations coming out of the hyper technologists, as I call them, and all of a sudden, people were quite seriously talking about, living to be 150 years old and having long distance sex and replacing organs and this somehow was a challenge to everything that we've been doing, and so we decided to look into it, and we came up with this Cyborg Manifesto, which was a kind of a high-level spoof of that whole new techno-culture that was emerging.
And then you published it as a pamphlet in Adbusters.
That's right, yes, and it was it created quite a storm. All of a sudden, the cyborgmanifesto.org, the website that we launched simultaneously with a pamphlet, it was suddenly full of hot debate, and in a sense that debate has only intensified over the years.
Really, is there still debate about the manifesto going on?
I don't think that people are still mentioning it, but I don't think it's really like many people actually fell for the manifesto. That was the strange part about it. More than half the people believed the manifesto. They actually took all these absolutely over the top speculations that we were coming up with and saying, yeah, that's great. That's the way we want to go. You know, we do want to live to be 150, and we do want to have sex with our girlfriend who's in Paris while I'm in New York, and somehow they fell for it, and that was the strange, spoofy kind of element of the manifesto that created so much buzz.
So it's very well written, and perhaps because you were attempting to be over the top, you were able to capture some of the feelings that people had. One of the things you say in it is, join humanity's new adventure, let yourself be carried along by this great wave of deterritorialization to a place where memory, pleasure, and pain melt together, mixing and morphing together.
Yeah.
Plunge in, welcome to your new home. I mean, people reacted very positively to this, but you use the word deterritorialization. That's one of your critiques of the emerging techno-cultural enthusiasms, is that you feel it alienates people from nature.
Yes, well, I was probably the last generation in human history that actually grew up in within nature. I remember when I was a young man, I was walking around rivers and hunting rabbits there in Australia where I lived, and all the learning lessons that I went through, they sort of emanated from nature. So I was a child of nature, and my personality is still very much in that realm. Whereas the generations that came after me, the last two or three generations, these people have grown up in an electronic environment. And I think that this move from a natural to an electronic environment is something that we're still coming to terms with. And I think a lot of people who have grown up in an electronic environment, they kind of like this idea of deterritorialization. They like the idea that man, you know, I can live in cyberspace. I can somehow plug myself into the computer and you know, as I said earlier, have virtual sex and God knows, maybe down the road I may even be able to download my brain into some other device and live forever. And that, you know, if you're living in an electronic environment, then that is a very tantalizing prospect. But if you are one of those people who grew up in the natural environment and you see the cynicism and some of the negative effects that the electronic environment can have, then you feel that this is a Faustian bargain that we should not take.
It's a little odd, I think, for a filmmaker like yourself to have that kind of an attitude. It seems like you're using this modern technology, this modern communications technology, precisely to communicate memes and images and values to people. Isn't it possible that all these technologies, electronic technologies, can be used in a liberatory and connective way and not just result in alienation?
Well, no, absolutely. I agree with that. I think that that's why I use the word Faustian bargain. I think there are some real positive things coming out of our techno push, but there are also some extreme negative things coming out, and this is, I think, the big question of our time. You know, which way shall we go? And I think one of the huge negatives is that, in a sense, we the people, you know, civil society, we're not really in control of this technology, that these technological breakthroughs that are happening. And we live in a world where corporations who are always the first people who jump on top of a technological breakthrough, they see these as opportunities to, you know, to make money and to take over markets. And I think one of the biggest negatives is the fact that we the people no longer control those technologies. And I would feel a hell of a lot better about our techno future if we the people were able to impose our precautionary principles and if we the people, civil society, was in control. But with corporations in control, I feel that we're in very dangerous ground.
One of the quotes that's popular of yours on the web is, I want to live in a world where human beings, not corporate entities, create the future.
Yeah.
And so what would it mean for individual empowerment to be in place in control of technological evolution as opposed to corporate power? I mean, for instance, isn't the personal computer a form of personal liberation through technological empowerment?
Yeah, well, I think it's both. I mean, I certainly felt liberated by this whole digital revolution. It came in the third or fourth year when we launched Adbusters magazine, and all of a sudden, using this new technology, we were able to, you know, come up with a magazine and create a global network of activists and launch worldwide, culture jamming campaigns like Buy Nothing Day, which would have been totally impossible, you know, before the digital revolution, before the personal computer. But at the same time, corporations have also learned how to now turn cyberspace into a very commercial kind of a medium, and they are now sending all kinds of messages to us, advertising messages that we don't even know half the time that we're getting them, and there is increasingly a feeling. I certainly have the feeling that the same thing is now happening to cyberspace as happened to television when I was a young man. When I was a young man, then people were saying that the television is going to save the world and it's going to create a global village, and there's all these wonderful communications breakthroughs that were going to happen because of television. But then bit by bit, corporations took it over and turned it into a mass merchandising device, and now television is largely a mind fuck. It's really something that I think is one of the primary causes of this 300% increase in mental disease that we have suffered over the last two generations.
Okay, so although you see technology as a terrain in which we can struggle for liberatory and empowering purposes, you think that some technologies like television are so inscribed with a negative purpose that they're intrinsically problematic. You're not arguing for a campaign to recapture television. You just want us to turn off the television.
Not at all. No, I am fighting for a media carta campaign. For us, the people, to control our own public airwaves. At the moment, I've tried to buy, for example, I'll give you a perfect example of that. We've tried to, over the last 10 years, purchase 30 seconds of airtime on MTV and Fox and ABC, CBS, NBC, all the big networks in the U.S., and they have all refused to sell us airtime. So we have reached a point now with our own public airwaves where corporations are basically saying, well, we don't like your message, your anti-messages, your talk against SUVs or your attempt to point out that 52% of the calories in a Big Mac come from fat and all these negative sides that our sponsors are pushing for. So we're not going to sell you any airtime. So to me, it's a question of control. Who is controlling television? Who's controlling the technological breakthroughs of the future? Is it us, the people? Do we still, you know, keep our democracy and keep a voice for ourselves, and does civil society remain in control? Or have we reached a sort of a Huxleyan age where corporations and advertising agencies and broadcasters somehow spoon-feed our culture to us from the top down? And we, the people, have in a real sense lost control of our own culture, and now we're living in this kind of a Huxleyan universe where we may have a smile on our face, but it's like a smile button kind of smile.
I'm speaking with Kalle Lawson. He's the founder of Adbusters Magazine, the Media Foundation, the Power Shift Agency, TV Turnoff Week, Buy Nothing Day, author of Culture Jam. You can find his work at adbusters.org. And I'm Dr. J. This is Change Surfer Radio. Kalle, does this campaign for technological empowerment extend to the biotechnologies? Because one, I would get the impression from some of the critique that there are some anti-GM activists, for instance, who think that GM is just so dangerous that we shouldn't even go there.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, I look at all the different areas. You know, the area of pharma, or for example, of pharmaceuticals, or the area of biotechnology, or even the more simple areas like the area of transportation and so on. And I see a lot of activists who fight these micro battles about not liking genetic engineering or not liking SUVs or not liking Zoloft or Prozac and so on. But to me, this is not really the battle that we should be fighting, and I think that's one of the reasons why we lefties to a large degree that's why we lost the last election and so on, because we the activist community we've somehow lost our narrative and we don't see the big picture anymore. The big picture is, in my opinion, a picture of who is in control. And it's a picture of how well our democracy is working. And I don't want to belabor the point, but I do see the future as being somehow a do-or-die battle between commercial corporate forces on the one hand and sort of bottoms-up democratic forces on the other. It's a battle between civil society and corporate power. So if we get all hepped up about, trying to get labels on our genetically modified labels on our food and so on, then I think it's a worthwhile battle as long as we see it as one micro battle in a much larger and more important macro battle. And it's this macro battle that I am interested in, and that's the one I want to fight, and that's the one I want to win.
In terms of that macro battle, I know that you've been very popular with the anti-globalization movement, and I wonder if you think it's correct and at what stage we're at with that movement. I've long been an advocate of world federalism, and one of the critiques that I've had of the anti-globalization movement is that the federalist solutions, truly transnational democratic solutions to the problems that they point out, haven't been more in the foreground in their critique.
And
I wonder, do you have any optimism about the possibility of a democratic transnational movement, or do you think it's more resistance that we need to fight?
No, I think I sort of agree with you. I see that I was at the Battle of Seattle back when it happened, and I thought, my God, here we go. It's the 1960s all over again. Young people are getting radicalized, and we're going to see a whole wave of political political action right across the planet. And for a while, it seemed to be happening, but then somehow it bogged down. And I think the reason it bogged down is because there's too many old lefties who are in control of the situation and who somehow don't really have the ability to think outside the lefty box anymore. There's a whole host of them. Most of the old lefties, I have some sort of a beef with them, you know, right down to Naomi Klein and even Howard Zinn and people like that. I think that democracy, you know, like President Bush says, I think democracy is what it's really all about. But it's not democracy in Iraq necessarily. It's global democracy. It's when we talk about democracy, does it mean that the United States has the power to sort of unilaterally start a war and call it a war for freedom and democracy, or is it the people of the planet somehow being able to vote in some possibly virtual way or in some global parliament that we may be able to have in some reformed UN setting down the road? But to me, global governance is the big issue, one of the big issues of our time. And when I talk about democracy, that's what I want to talk about, whether the people in India and the people in China and the people in other parts of the world that at the moment hardly have a voice, whether they also count, and whether for example, whether the 80% of the people who were against that Iraq war, for example, at the time when the Bush administration started it, whether they count also. I mean, I really do believe that global governance is one of the great projects of our time that we should be putting our energy behind.
One of the influential pieces, and I'm spacing on the name of the author, but it was an article about 10 years ago called McDonald's versus Jihad.
Yeah.
And the thesis, which is, I think, a kind of a central idea in neocon thinking right now, is that there is this global reaction against modernity that's driving fundamentalism, and that all of modernity, including McDonald's commercialism, and the individualism that's wrapped into them, is a part of our democratic subversion of these more traditional authoritarian societies. And obviously, a third-party position on this is that there can be some kind of alternative to both of them. But do you credit any of that argument in places like Iran, where, you know, the desire for Britney Spears, Coca-Cola, and McDonald's might have something to do with wanting to get the mullahs off your back?
Yeah. Well, I think it's you have to bring time into this, because modernity is something that European cultures and American culture and Canadian and Australian culture, it took us roughly a century, you know, to get to where we are, and the fact that we were allowed to make this sort of a transition over a century, I think, really helped us a lot. Whereas now many cultures, like the culture in Iran, is faced with huge pressures to basically do that all in half a generation, and I think that's where the problem lies. I think that a culture like Iran has to be allowed to evolve its own culture in its own time. And of course, given the fact that for the first time in human history now we're living in a global culture that's gelling right now before our eyes, that makes it much more difficult. But I don't like this kind of knee-jerk opinion that so many people have, is that, oh, these Islamists or these Iranians, you know, they're way back in the medieval times, they need to modernize fast and they need to get their act together. Well, sure, they need to get their act together, but in their own time.
I'm speaking with Khalid Lawson. He's the founder of Adbusters Magazine, the Media Foundation, PowerShift Ad Agency, TV Turnoff Week, and Buy Nothing Day. This is Dr. J, and you're listening to Change Surfer Radio. One of the issues that you were recently asked to weigh in on that I found on the web, which is fascinating to me also, is the emerging field of neuroeconomics. I'm assuming you've seen the work of Zach Lynch, who's trying to articulate this for the corporate elite, how they can use neurotechnologies.
Yeah.
And I see that you're troubled by that, and as am I, the notion that corporate and advertising agencies and government propaganda ministries will all have this increasingly detailed map of the way that their various kinds of communication affect the human brain.
Yeah.
It seems to suggest, you know, from your, especially from your perspective, that where we already live in a pretty dystopian world,
yeah,
an even more dystopic possibility.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, this is another one of those examples where some fantastic new technology comes aboard and suddenly we're able to look at the brain and figure out how it operates and so on. And you know, isn't it strange that the very, very first people who start using it are corporations who want to advertise and who want to figure out better ways to sell you things or to brand you and so on. So, and this is exactly what I don't like about that whole techno march into the future that we're engaged in. You know, why don't we, when we make a breakthrough like that, then why don't we use it for a myriad other possibilities? Well, you know, why is it that somehow it is immediately used for this this sort of a Huxleyan process of controlling people's purchasing and people's lives like that? So yes, I have no problem with the technology, but I don't like the fact that corporations then start using it immediately for purposes that I don't like, and I really bemoan the fact that we civil society just don't seem to have any way of taking charge of those kind of situations, and the corporations continue always running away with the ball.
One of the utopian thinkers that I've always liked was Andre Gortz. Are you familiar with Gortz's work?
Yes, vaguely, yes.
And one of the ideas that he articulated was the notion that a way to disintermediate people from their dependence on corporations would be to build lots of community workshops, to give people, you know, I see now Home Depot as kind of the commercial version of his vision. You know, people increasingly taking responsibility for doing and building things in their own communities. And is that the kind of vision that you have, that one opportunity, that we don't want to go back to the caves or a pastoral society, but that we want to find non-corporate, non-commercial ways to have the same kinds of cooperative ways, to have the same kinds of technological affluence that we have now?
Yeah, well, that's a large question. There's many ways to tackle it. I think that my way of for civil society to control corporations is to go back to the mindset that we had back in the early days of the American Revolution, where civil society allowed corporations to be formed, and then they allowed the corporations to have corporate charters, but then civil society took a very cold, hard look at what that charter was and what rights corporations were given, and they made sure that corporations were working in the interest of civil society, and that when a corporation did do something that betrayed the democratic trust, the public trust, then those corporations were immediately slapped on the fingers, or sometimes their charters were revoked, they were put out of business, and civil society, you know, corporations were basically treated like dogs, and they were kept close at heel. Whereas over the last 100 years, corporations, through the courts and through the legal systems, they have won what I call corporate personhood. They have the corporate eye under the 14th Amendment. They have similar rights as human beings now, and somehow corporations have gotten the better of us. They are now allowed to get involved in the political process, and if they like one candidate more than another, they have sometimes a power to somehow steer the whole political process in directions that aren't necessarily in the democratic interest. And I think the big problem is to recode corporations, to have a situation where every 5 years we look at the corporate charter and say, is this corporation still behaving? Is this corporation still working in the public interest? Or does this corporation have to be pulled to heel? And at the moment, we don't have that. We have corporations basically running roughshod over us and making us obese and selling us drugs we don't need and having us drive around in SUVs that are creating climate change. And this is what has to change. We have to turn the tables on corporations, and civil society has to get back in control.
Kala, it's been such a pleasure talking with you, and I'm really glad that we had this talk, because I see so much frothy sophistication in your perspective, and sometimes I haven't followed Adbusters before, but I recommend that people take a look at the fascinating work you do. Just one last question, maybe. I've always been a fan of the French situationists and their notion of déterrement, using corporate and commercial images in ways that point up the absurdity of them. And I think it's become a very common technique now.
Yeah.
But was that one of your inspirations at all?
Absolutely. Guy Debord is one of my great heroes. I think he was one of the first people to really understand what what the modernity is doing to us and what it could lead to down the road, you know, how the society of spectacle can really take us over and create a sort of a culture where we human beings don't truly live anymore. And he's situationism and Guy Debord, that was one of the great wellsprings of Adbusters and a lot of the stuff that we do here, especially culture jamming.
Well, I've been speaking with Kala Lawson. He's the founder of Adbusters Magazine, the Media Foundation, PowerShift Ad Agency, TV Turnoff Week, Buy Nothing Day, and many other projects besides. He's the author of Culture Jam. You can find his work at adbusters.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, that was a pleasure talking to you.
These are some pieces from the Cyborg Manifesto, which Kala Lawson and his colleagues wrote and posted at, it's still posted at cyborgmanifesto.org. Friends, the end of natural evolution is at hand. 100,000 generations, and now man makes a hard right turn towards a new techno-organism, a hybrid of flesh and silicon, towards a cyber-citizenry populating, let's just say, a post-human world. People find that kind of language scary. Chicken Littles make their fingers into little crosses that say, "You must not go there." Well, here's the news. We're already there. We're designing it at the atomic level. We've solved the genome. We've pushed artificial intelligence forward to the point where machines can now be made not only to think, but by most significant definitions, to feel. For the first time, we have the capacity to shape our evolutionary destiny, the job once considered the exclusive prerogative of God. This is the proper inevitable phase. It is the logic of our civilization. We humans will also grow smarter and stronger. We will bioengineer healthier bodies, boost our metabolic functions, enhance our sense of self through pharmacology. In time, we will bridge that insuperable chasm, that great ontological gulf between machine programming and human consciousness. Our robots will gradually evolve into something like us, and we into something like them. Together, we will venture beyond the tyranny of genes. We will become more than simple bags of chemicals and cells that begin to decay at the moment of birth. We will find remedies for all our current frailties, wrinkles, obesity, hair loss, sexual dysfunction, and cures for every disease. This will be the century of miracles. Amputees will grow limbs. The blind will see. Intelligent nanobots the size of molecules will cruise the human bloodstream, cleaning clogged arteries and repairing aging organs. No genetic weakness or accident of fate will be tolerated as we seize the power to upgrade ourselves. Again, that's intended to be a parody, posted at cyborgmanifesto.org and written by Kala Lawson and Adbusters, which they discovered a lot of people getting very enthused by. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts with me, Dr. J, you can contact me at jhughes@changesurfer.com. That's jhughes@changesurfer.com. Or you can read my Change Surfing columns at betterhumans.com or check out the collaborative Cyborg Democracy blog I participate in at cyborgdemocracy.net. Or you can read my new book, Citizen Cyborg. For more details about Citizen Cyborg, visit cyborgdemocracy.net. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3, thanks to the AInfos Radio Project. So educate, agitate, and organize. And I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.